for some football.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Welcome to the FTN DataCast, the fantasy football podcast where data drives the discussion. Here are your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Tyler Lochner.
Monday, June 6, 2022. Welcome back, everybody, to the FTN DataCast presented by the FTN Network. Adam Pfeiffer joined, as always, by Tyler Lochner. Wrapping up our positional preview series today with the tight end position, which, be warned, I will say, though, it feels as deep as ever. Tyler, it's famous last words, but how do you feel about the position overall? Is it still the same kind of mindset? Like, if you miss out in the top four or five, just hope you get it right later on in the draft. And how was your weekend?
Weekend was great. Spent a lot of time outside. High level overview to answer your question. I don't think it's exactly the same. I think the tight end position has been quote unquote deep with, like, you know, a bunch of dart throw options famously for years now. Mm-hmm. But I do think this year is different in the fact that after the first four or five guys, there's another tier of like four or five guys that are definitely worth drafting before you get into the quote unquote deep category. I'm sure we'll talk about that in our tiers, but that's kind of how I feel about it. I feel like there's more levels to it this year rather than just like, oh, you didn't get Travis Kelce? Okay, you're screwed.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like the last couple of years, it was like, okay, you have Kelce and then Kittle was in that tier a couple of years ago, but like we'll talk about it, but situation wise, he just hasn't been able to touch Kelce's numbers. And then we saw Waller and then Andrews, obviously. And it's like, okay, if you missed out on one of those three or four, you're probably just hoping for the best. But now we'll talk about it. Like we've done, if you missed our quarterback, running back, and receiver previews, first of all, go check them out because they have been really in-depth and they've been awesome to record. But we've been going through this by tiers, and I think it's the best way to do it. And this position is obviously, it can be a little bit difficult, but I do find myself really interested in a lot of the players later on in draft. So we'll talk about it and get into it. But let's kick it off with tier one. And I think it's interesting going into this because you could make the case that there's only one player that belongs in tier one. Maybe there's two or three. But who's in your tier one? Is it just Travis Kelce?
So my tier one is just Travis Kelce. And is he the only one in yours?
I debated it. I put Andrews there as well.
I don't think that's problematic. I mean, Andrews' numbers last year were insane. And his situation doesn't really change.
If anything, like, you look at it,
might have gotten better.
Right. Kelce not competing with Tyreek Hill for targets, who's coming off his... Keep in mind, Tyreek Hill's coming off a career season in targets because the downfield work wasn't as high and he was getting more targets close to the line of scrimmage. He was getting a lot of double-digit target games. So Kelce's going to be targeted maybe more than ever. And then Andrews obviously just lost Hollywood Brown. So, like, I do think Kelce, like, I still have Kelce as my number one tight end in my rankings, but I think Andrews still, for me, belongs in this tier. But I totally get it. Like, Kelce's been 1,000+, and just, like, it's not, with these two players, it's essentially, like, another receiver you get to put in your tight end spot. Like, that's the usage 100%. We're seeing.
Yeah.
Who do you want to talk about, though, if anything?
I'll just, because I have Kelce alone in the tier, I'll just kind of explain my reasoning. Pretty simple. Not breaking ground here. It's because Tyreek Hill's no longer on the team. Mm-hmm. Will that hurt the Chiefs? Like losing such a big playmaker? Like, will it hurt their other options? I think that's actually possible. Like, I don't necessarily think this just becomes a total slam dunk for Kelce. But I do think he ends up seeing even more volume. And Tyreek Hill last year was the first read option on 130 of Kansas City's passes. Travis Kelce was second in first read options on the team with 103, and nobody else had over 70. So, like, where are those 130 first read targets going to go? Most of them are going to go to Kelce. Like, Kelce, how many is he going to see now? 150? First read looks, not necessarily targets. Is he going to see 150? I don't know. And then Hill also had 9 end zone targets last year. Kelce only had 4.
Yeah, there was a stretch where Kelce just wasn't getting end zone targets. Like, I think the first, like, 6 or so weeks of the season, he didn't even have one.
Yeah.
It was kind of weird.
It was weird. And with Kelce, with Hill gone, I think Kelce ends up seeing more first read targets, more total targets, more end zone targets. So you take this already high volume, awesome player and just add on additional work in the offense. That's the only reason Kelce is alone in tier one for me. But yeah, I really don't have a problem with Andrews being considered there with him too. I will always take Kelce over Andrews in drafts this year though.
Yeah, I most likely will too. Unless something changes, like I don't think my one and two spots will change between Kelce and Andrews. Kind of interesting. It's very similar when you look at, because I was looking at the first read numbers as well. And if you look at it, like you mentioned, Tyreek Hill had 130 first read targets, and then Kelce was down there a little bit over 100. Last year, Hollywood Brown had 120 first read targets. Mark Andrews was at 118. So they're pretty much even with each other.
Yeah.
And now it's really only Bateman at receiver for this Baltimore team. And they don't throw to the running backs very often. So Mark Andrews, again, those 118 first read targets were easily the most among tight ends, but it was also, I think, 12th in the entire league or 10th in the entire league. So, and he's always been, you know, elite in terms of end zone targets. He led all tight ends in terms of end zone targets with 12. That was actually top 7 in all football. So
same number as Mike Evans and Jamar Chase.
Exactly. And Hollywood Brown had 12 as well. So it's just like, where else are they throwing? And we know the Ravens are going to throw more or throw less this season because of all the injuries they had to their secondary and everything. But while they're not going to be a top 10 pass rate team, most likely, keep in mind, going into last season, before all the injuries, offensive coordinator Greg Roman said they wanted to throw the ball more. So maybe we don't see the 2020 Ravens run rate, which was like, substantially higher than most teams. But it could be, the passing rate could be a little bit higher, which is not a bad thing at all for Mark Andrews. So yeah, tier one, tier two. I have Kelce as a ranked higher, but I think Andrews belongs in this tier, especially after what he's done the last couple seasons. So tier two, you have Mark Andrews, obviously, unless he's in tier three, which would be absurd.
No, I've got Andrews in two along with Kyle Pitts.
And this is where we differ because I have Kyle Pitts in a tier of his own at tier two. And it's really just based off volume, right? Like there's concerns with Kittle and with Waller, given the fact that Waller's got Devontae Adams now, we'll talk about it, and George Kittle George Kittle, we can just kind of tie all these tight ends together, right? Because they're pretty close. George Kittle, you can make the case, is the best tight end in football, just all around, right? Best run blocking tight end, maybe ever. You know, he's great after the catch, but the way he's used is not exactly fantastic for fantasy, given how good he is, right? He run blocks as much as anybody, especially in this offense. He's never had a season with over 6 touchdowns, which is pretty surprising. And when Kelce can get double digits and when Andrews can get double digits, and then other players around him are getting the same amount of touchdowns, if not more, plus they're getting more targets, it's just tough for me to put Kittle in a higher tier. So Kyle Pitts, lined up out wide a lot last year. They're going to line him up out wide a ton. And he won out wide. Like, that was why he was so, polarizing and so exciting coming out of college, because he played everywhere. And we saw, I remember the Miami game last year where he lined up out wide against one of the top 7 corners in the NFL and Xavier Howard and had like 80 yards and a touchdown on him, beat him down the sideline. Like, there aren't many tight ends, if any, that can do that. And Kyle Pitts, again, you want to talk about touchdowns, won last year and it didn't even come in the U.S., right? It was a London game, I think. That's going to change.
He did lead the Falcons in end zone targets though with 6. So that will definitely change. I mean, he's very due for positive touchdown regression.
Right. And you look at the situation, like obviously the offense is going to be pretty bad. We have Marcus Mariota at quarterback, and it's not exactly the same comparison, but like Marcus Mariota got some borderline elite fantasy seasons from Delanie Walker, who I always thought Delanie Walker was one of the most underrated players in football when he was in Tennessee and everything. But Delanie Walker is nowhere close to that level of talent that Kyle Pitts is. So we've seen Marcus Mariota rely on the tight end position, which he's going to have to by default this year because they just, it's London and it's Kyle Pitts. But like you look at some of the seasons that Delanie Walker put together, like 111 targets, 74 catches, over 800 yards, only had 3 touchdowns in 2017. But like, and he also had a 1,000 yard season back in 2015. Like, Kyle Pitts had 1,000 yards last year. I think there's 2 tight ends that you can make the case will get 1,000 yards. It's probably Kelce and Kyle Pitts. And if the Andrews touchdowns go up a little, and Andrews, obviously, thank you. And if the touchdowns go up, which they should, and again, it's not going to be an elite offense, but just talent-wise, he's going to score more touchdowns. I think there's a chance Kyle Pitts finishes as a tight end one. And that's why he's in tier two for me, ahead of Waller, ahead of Kittle. What do you think about Kyle Pitts? And then obviously we talked about Andrews, who you have in this tier. But let's talk about Kyle Pitts, because I find myself like really struggling to pass on him if he's there in the fourth round.
Kyle Pitts is awesome. You mentioned he had over 1,000 yards. I did not know this stat. Maybe I'm behind the times on it, but it was the most receiving yards by a rookie tight end since Mike Ditka in 1961. Mm-hmm. That's huge. And I think other than the touchdowns, Pitts had kind of like a Mike Evans-esque stat line. Like not too many targets, but a lot of yards. 110 targets, 68 receptions, 1,026 yards, and then only one touchdown. Is it that unrealistic to see him in this offense go to like 85 receptions, 1,200 yards, and 6 touchdowns? Like that would be enough for him to potentially threaten the tight end one overall spot.
Especially because he's going to be schemed targets this year, right? Like there was a lot of line him up out wide. Like he wasn't in line very often, which again, he shouldn't block for more than like obviously when they run the football, cool, he'll block sometimes, but like he should be running a route 90% of the time given the state of this offense. And like last year he was 9.3 yards per target, which was pretty much the highest among qualified tight ends outside of Dallas Goedert and Kittle. And like 15 yards per reception. Like I think those come down not because he can't post numbers that high, but like you want him getting more receptions and more targets. Kyle Pitts, I think it's pretty possible that he finishes as the tight end one. The only thing that might keep him down is the offense, right? And that's why he's not in the same tier as Kelce and Andrews, because they're a much better offense.
Agreed. I actually think my like take for the year is that Pitts finishes as a top two tight end. I think he beats one of Kelce or Andrews.
I mean, all he has to do is get like 6 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Because he's going to have 1,000 yards most likely. And you can say, okay, but what if the yards per target and everything come down? He's going to catch more passes by default. Like he has to. He had like under 70 catches last year. Like you said, like 85, totally in range. So for me, Kyle Pitts, not just ahead of Kittle and Waller, but in a separate tier for me. Let's get to tier three, though, where I'm assuming we start seeing Darren Waller, George Kittle. In this tier, I have Waller, Kittle, and Dalton Schultz.
I have Darren Waller and George Kittle. Schultz here.
Yeah, I mean, I just think Dalton Schultz is similar to Kyle Pitts, like just going to run a ton of routes, get a ton of looks. And again, like he doesn't have the like raw talent wise. He's nowhere close to any of these tight ends we talked about yet, but that doesn't always matter. And he's in such a great situation behind CeeDee Lamb as the second target in this passing game. Dak had a really strong connection with him. And, you know, if you want to say, okay, these are full PPR, maybe you bump Schultz up because he's most likely going to catch more passes than, I mean, he could catch more passes than any tight end in the league outside of maybe Kelce and Andrews. He's in that type of role. So I don't know. I'm assuming you have Schultz in tier four.
I do have Schultz in tier four. Yeah. So it's basically just, I just don't think he's like as good as these guys from like a talent perspective.
And he's not.
I understand the role is good. And obviously I'm a Dak stan, so it's not like it would surprise me if he finished as a top
Well, you just think Michael Gallup's going to be amazing, so somebody's got to...
Michael Gallup is going to be amazing, bro.
Somebody's numbers have to come down.
Let me just point this out real quick.
I'll say this. I
don't have a problem with you putting Schultz in tier three, but I do think it's a leap of faith.
That's totally fair, and I was just going to mention, because he played... Remember, Gallup missed the beginning of the season last year. Cooper missed a couple games with COVID, I believe. Schultz played in 7 games with Gallup, Lamb, and Cooper all in lineup. And his numbers did obviously dip, right? In that split, 11.1 PPR points per game. But he actually averaged more catches per game, 5.0, with all 3 receivers healthy than he did with all 3, with at least one of the receivers inactive at 4.5. So that was kind of interesting. Targets per game in the split were at 6.1, which were right on par, like 6.2. And like I just think he's easily going to finish second. He played in the slot 44% of the time, which was 14th among tight ends last year. I think that number probably goes up a little bit. And you could see him in like a Mike Gesicki type role where he plays the slot like 65, 70% of the time. And you look at his overall numbers, like, I think the consistency has been great. He had 78 catches last year, which only trailed Andrews and Kelsey, and that, and his situation's even better this season for volume. Saw 17% of Dallas's first read targets, 81 overall first read targets for six among tight ends. I just think there's a lot to like about him, the role he has. Again, not going to do much after the catch or anything. That's probably the one case against him. He was 29th in yards after the catch per reception at the position. But if he's getting a safe floor, like 50 yards, 50, you know, five, six catches almost every week, like, I'll take that at tight end. So I think he's still behind Waller and Kittle for me, but it's not by a lot, which is crazy because, like, Darren Waller and George Kittle are elite players at the position. But talk about Kittle and Waller. Like, it's weird to see them not even in the same category or same sentence as Kelsey, where they have been a little bit. But, you know, Waller's year was kind of lost last season due to injury. And we talked about it a lot. Like, defenses played bracket coverage against Darren Waller so often. They can't do that this year. So he's going to see higher percentage targets and better targets. But the overall targets, probably going to come down with arguably the best receiver in the NFL joining.
Yeah, definitely going to come down. I mean, Davante Adams could still lead the league in targets.
Yeah.
Derek Carr throws the ball a lot. So I still like Waller. I think if I had to pick a fourth tight end that was going to go over 1,000 yards, it would be Waller. Because kind of like Kyle Pitts, he can make really big plays. And then I'll just briefly talk about George Kittle. I actually think Kittle is the best tight end in football, like, overall right now. You know, not counting Gronk, because he's obviously past his prime. Gronk is still incredible. But I just think Kittle is, like, the closest thing we have to prime Gronk in terms of, like, overall tight end play. So, my gosh, I want to see George Kittle in a high-volume role so bad, like we saw in his second and third years. I mean, his second year, he had 88 receptions, 1,377 yards, which was a tight end record. And he's really good at scoring touchdowns. He had 6 touchdowns last year on only 71 receptions. He missed time. We've seen his ceiling, which he hit a couple of times, like, in the middle of the year, like 200 yards, multiple touchdowns. Does any other tight end have a ceiling like that? Kelsey, obviously, but I don't even think Pitts. I guess Andrews too. So maybe I'm underestimating. Maybe my love for Kittle is blinding me a little bit on how similar some of these other elite tight ends are. But I am a little nervous about Kittle. That's why I don't have him in tier two, just like you. I think from a talent perspective, he's a tier one player. I wish I could still be putting him in tier one. But of these elite tight ends, Kelsey, Andrews, Pitts, Waller, and Kittle, Kittle's the one I'm drafting last, even though I like him the most.
Yeah, and it's just like, again, if you got fantasy points for run blocking, he'd be in the first round without question. Second among all tight ends in run blocking snaps last year, despite missing a couple games, like you mentioned. And, like, as good as he is running routes and making plays after the catch and scoring touchdowns, he's equally as good, if not better, almost at creating running lanes for these running backs. And that's very important in this offense. So if George Kittle, like if you put everybody's best case scenario season up against each other, George Kittle will be right up there because he's that good. He's just as good, if not better, than any tight end in the NFL. It's just, obviously, for fantasy, we have to understand that A, it's a run first offense. B, he's got Debo and Brandon Ayuk there. C, we're still a little bit unsure about what we're going to expect from Trey Lance. So there's enough question marks for me to put him in this tier and well behind Pitts, Andrews, and Kelsey.
It's enough to make, like, the other thing with Kittle is it's more inconsistent, I would say, than these other players. Like, yeah, he's got that ridiculous ceiling, but after, so his two crazy ceiling games back to back, 12 targets, 181 yards, 2 touchdowns, 15 targets, 13 receptions, 151 yards and a touchdown. And then two weeks later, he had 3 targets. And then the game after that, he had 2 targets. Like, it's kind of all over the place.
Right. He missed a couple games, so keep in mind, but he was 18th among all tight ends in routes run with, I think, 389. Yeah, 389. So he played 14 games. So that's, what, 27 routes per game, which is fine, but it's nowhere close to Kyle Pitts, to Mike Gesicki, like, to Dalton Schultz, to Kelsey, to Andrews, like that. And we talk about it. This is more so with, like, the streaming tight ends and, like, value DFS plays. Like, you're simply looking for tight ends that are running routes. And Kittle obviously will, but when you're comparing the elite tier at tight end, it's like Andrews and Kelce are elite players too, and they're running like let's look at this for instance. So what did I say? Kittle was 27 routes per game, just over 27 routes. Like,
yep.
Mark Andrews was, let's see, 37. Like, 10 more routes per game is not insignificant. So, again, I would love to see Kittle just play a massive role in the passing game, which he still can to an extent. But, again, like, I'm not avoiding Kittle. Like, in a lot of these drafts, if he's in the fifth round or something, like, I still like the potential
agreed.
There.
Agreed.
But, It's tough to put him in the same tier as Andrews or Kelce, or even Pitts for at least me. Anything else from this tier before we get to, I think, the more interesting players, which I think the next tier is the last tier where it's like, okay, you feel good about the volume,
and yeah,
you kind of know what you're going to get.
So this is tier four, and this is what I said at the beginning, where, okay, the five guys, I guess you have six, but the five guys that we just talked about, Kelce, Andrews, Pitts, Waller, Kittle, you obviously feel great if you draft one of them. And in previous years, it was always like after that, then you really started guessing. I don't think that's the case this year. I think this tier four group is where you're not guessing. So for here, I have Dallas Goedert, TJ Hockenson, Gronk, if he plays, Zach Ertz, and Dalton Schultz. I think all of these guys are players that you can feel good drafting. Gronk, the longer he waits to announce mm-hmm. he's returning, the more nervous I get, but...
And let me just preface, like, he's if Gronk plays, he has a high ceiling of this tier, without question, right?
Oh, without question. He might even be, like...
You could put him at the end of tier three,
You could totally. Probably put him at the top, yeah.
Or a top, yeah, I know.
Top of tier four, bottom of tier three, for sure.
The other thing, too, like, if Gronk is back and Godwin misses time, Gronk is going to see touchdowns, but he's also going to see an uptick in target. Like, it'll be tough to not put Gronk as a top six tight end, at the very least. But, yeah, for me, tier four, obviously, I don't have Schultz because I have him in tier three. I have Goddard, Hockenson, Zach Ertz. For me, this is just, like, you feel pretty, like you said, you feel pretty good about what you're going to get. We always talk about what Amon-Ra St. Brown did to end the season without Hockenson and Swift for a lot of those games. But we don't talk about what Hockenson did at the beginning of the season before Amon-Ra broke out and yeah. everything. You look at Hockenson, he was very hyped coming into last season. Remember, he was like the breakout tight end going right around Andrews, if you remember. Like, there was kind of some debates about Hockenson or Andrews. But weeks one and two, it was like, okay, Hockenson's going to have a massive season. During those weeks, 16 catches on 20 targets for 163 yards and two touchdowns. Ridiculously strong start. And then he was a little bit up and down, but through the first 13 weeks of the season, he was the tight end three in fantasy. He was third in receptions among tight ends, eighth in receiving yards. The volume was great. He didn't finish great because he's dealt with injuries, obviously. But he had 21% target share, which was fifth highest among all tight ends. And nearly seven targets per game. He fits this Jared Goff offense as well as Amon-Ra because he's not being used down the field. Goff last season, lowest intended air yards per attempt. 4.5 air yards per completion was also worst in the league. And 51% of his passes were of the short variety, which was 0 to 9 yards. Like, that is where TJ Hockenson's going to live. Now you look at it this season, same kind of situation with Amon-Ra. It's like, okay, will his volume come down? Maybe, but you have DJ Chark, and whenever Jameson Williams plays, stretching the defense. I think for me, with Hockenson, I project him very similarly to Zach Ertz, and Ertz goes later. So I just prefer Ertz of this group. What do you think about Hockenson, Ertz, and then Dallas Goedert? It's interesting too now because Ertz is really the only one that you look at it in the offseason probably had his overall involvement in the offense either stay the same or improve because obviously Hopkins will miss the first six games. Obviously they brought in Marquise Brown, but Goedert, they bring in A.J. Brown, and then Hockenson, everybody's going to be healthy to start the season, plus they added two receivers.
So you... For this group, you said something that is basically exactly how I feel. I rate every player in this group very similarly. And when that's the case, it means that I don't want to be the first one to draft a player in this group.
Yeah.
And that usually ends up being TJ Hockenson. I actually don't have it in front of me, but I think his ADP is tight end six.
Yeah, if you have Schultz in this tier, I'm pretty sure Schultz goes ahead of Hockenson.
Okay.
But between Goddard, Hockenson, Ertz, Hockenson does go before the other two.
So I actually wrote up Hockenson as my biggest bust candidate on the Lions. And that's not to say that he's not going to be a good fantasy player. I think it's very, it's extremely unlikely that he finishes outside of like the top 10, but I don't want to draft him as the tight end 6 or tight end 7 because the guys that are going to go 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 are all very similar to me. Hockenson was the tight end 6 on a per game basis last year from weeks 1 to 13. You were mentioning how good he was in that stretch. He finished as a fantasy tight end 1 in 6 of those 13 games, but in 5 of those 13 games, he finished outside of the top 20. So it was a little bit of a roller coaster. It's not like when he didn't finish as a tight end 1, he was a really good streaming option. He just flat out busted. So with Amon-Ra breaking out and they drafted Jameson Williams and brought in DJ Chark, and DeAndre Swift is going to be healthy hopefully the whole year, it does make Hockenson a little bit risky for me to draft at the top of this tier. So it sounds like you agree with me on that. And then you asked me about Ertz. I don't know. I completely thought that Ertz was dust. Like, I thought he was super done and no longer good at football when he was on the Eagles. And then he gets traded and starts playing with Kyler Murray, and I was proven wrong. Like, I don't think he's still some world, you know, great tight end. I think there was a point a few years ago where he was like a tier 2 fantasy tight end. But on the year, he ended up seeing 112 targets, which is third among tight ends. He does still have the problem of not gaining many yards. He only had 763 yards on those 111 targets. For comparison, Kyle Pitts had over 1,000 yards on fewer targets. So that's my biggest problem with Ertz. Like, I'm really good with him in a full PPR format. Anything less than that, he might even drop out of this tier for me.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting too, because like, obviously he made his Arizona debut week 7 against Houston. And then from that stretch on, he played in 9 or 7 games without DeAndre Hopkins, who missed time with injury. During those games, he was really, really rock solid, right? 9 targets per game.
Very rock solid.
Over 6 catches per game, just about 60 receiving yards per game, which again, with him, you'll take. 13.7 PPR points per game. Like, the volume was great. Hopkins won't be there, but it's also a little bit different because it's not like they don't have Hopkins and just hadn't added anybody. Hollywood Brown will be there, and he has a rapport with Kyler Murray, and we've talked about it. Not the same situation, but his target share last year, like, his targets were great last year. So he can clearly be an 8 to 10 target per game player for the first 6 weeks of the season. So Ertz, I wouldn't expect 9 targets per game with Hopkins out to start the season, but like 7, 8. He'll have some 9, 10 targets games easily.
Ertz is the player that I'll draft last out of this tier. Because every other player that I have here, Goddard, Hockenson, Gronk, and Schultz, has way higher ceilings. And probably,
what do you think of Goddard? Because I haven't really done much work or, you know, analysis on him since the AJ Brown trade, because I just kind of think going even before that trade, he was kind of in that tier frame where it's like, I'm fine with him. But I'm kind of in the same mindset now, even with AJ Brown. Like, I'm still fine with him. I think I prefer waiting a round or two and getting Ertz. But like, yeah, Goddard after the catch ability, touchdown scoring. Like, Goddard had a weird season because his touchdowns were really, like, there were so many plays where he was wide open in the end zone, just didn't get the ball. But talent-wise, like, yeah, there's a reason the Eagles moved on from Zach Ertz, is because Dallas Goedert was clearly the better player the last couple years.
I will say I haven't done like a deep data dive analysis on the AJ Brown impacting Dallas Goedert, but my opinion of it is that it probably doesn't impact him that much. Like, they just have different roles. Goddard last year had a 20.7% target market share, which was 5th among tight ends. It was better than Hockenson, Pitts, better than Ertz, better than Schultz. So does AJ Brown there bump him down to like 18%? It's possible. You know, we've talked about how AJ Brown's a target dominator. So that's definitely possible. But yeah, Goddard, he's a player that I've always liked, but I just don't think he's like, I don't think he's that great, but maybe it's just the situation. Maybe it's like playing on the Eagles and the run first offense. But when I look at his stats, he's always better than I like expect, like, than he is in my head. And you mentioned the fact that Eagles were willing to move on from Zach Ertz, but a 21% target market share, top five among tight ends. That's really good. And it also shows that the Eagles genuinely like him, add on the fact they moved on from Ertz. So I'm happy with Goddard in this tier. I'm happy drafting him. I think, where does he usually go? Like ninth-ish round, something like that. Eighth round, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a fair place to draft him. And if you miss out on, if I'm going to miss out on one of these elite tight ends, this is the tier I want to be in. So I know I have a lot of Goddard already, and I know I'm going to end up drafting a lot more of him. And it's not because I love him. It's just, I think his...
You just feel better about him than the guys we're going to talk about next.
Exactly.
Totally understandable. Dallas Goddard, 2 end zone targets last season. So
he had 4 touchdowns though. So right. Yeah, that speaks to his yak ability, which you were talking about.
Exactly. Over 7 yards after the catch per reception. But yeah, he'd like to see some more end zone looks. But again, like Jalen Hurts had, I believe, 13 carries inside the 5, which led the NFL, or not led the NFL, but was, I think, 2nd or 3rd behind Connor and Jonathan Taylor. Like he was, and then obviously there's still a run for his team. So wouldn't expect a ton of touchdowns, but yeah, 2 end zone targets seems insanely low for Dallas Goddard.
Just quickly looking at his yak. Only Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, and George Kittle had more yards after the catch than him. Kelce and Andrews saw double the targets.
Right.
And, you know, Kittle saw 20 more targets. So yeah, he's a playmaker. He's clearly better than I think he is. So
all right, let's go to tier 5. This is where, I don't know, you might think it gets scary. I think it gets fun. And I do this every year. I love kind of looking at some situations for later round tight ends in fantasy to break out. And for my tier 5, I have Cole Kmet, David Njoku, who we'll talk about. I really like Njoku this year. Dawson Knox, Pat Freiermuth, Mike Gesicki, Irv Smith, and Albert O.
We're looking at tier 5. Dawson Knox, David Njoku, Noah Fant, who might surprise you, Pat Freiermuth, Cole Kmet, and Mike Gesicki.
All right, so pretty much the same tier, except I have Irv and you have Fant.
Yeah.
Talk about Fant, because when that trade happened, remember it was initially reported Fant was not part of the deal. Like we were waiting for the details and it was like, Noah Fant is going to smash. He's going to be amazing. And then it's like, oh yeah, by the way, Noah Fant's going to Seattle. And it's weird too. Last year, run first offense in Denver, bad quarterback play with Drew Lock, dealing with multiple players at receiver that can get targets. And Fant was in that situation. Going to Seattle now, run first offense, bad quarterback play, maybe in Drew Lock. I think Geno will be starting and be better than Drew Lock. And then you also have competition with 2 receivers, Tyler Lockett. He's in the same situation. And they might run the ball even more, unless they're just so bad that Pete Carroll has to just throw the ball, which is like his worst nightmare. But I'm like insanely low on Noah Fant, and it hurts me because remember, like coming out of college, he was like the yak guy. Like he was like getting comps to a lot of these elite, like George Kittle, not in terms of run blocking, obviously, yeah. But you still seem to have a little bit of hope for Noah Fant, which I get. He's still immensely talented.
I do. I have hope for him, and I think he's extremely undervalued. I just think the fact that Russ left Seattle and then it seemed like Fant almost got him and then realized he was part of the trade too. I do think
he would be in the tier we probably just talked about if he stayed.
He would be. I think that was like the funniest thing that happened this offseason. Like
Twitter was really, really funny that day because everybody was like, Noah Fant to the moon, Noah Fant to the moon. And I'm sitting there like, yeah, this is really good for him. And then like 5-6 minutes after the trade was initially announced, it was like, going to Seattle, you just see Noah Fant's name, you're like, oh, but then everybody immediately went to Albert O to the moon.
So my take on Fant is that he was not in a great situation. Like you talked about how he had Drew Lock and okay, but his situation hasn't changed that much. Like it's so funny. We talk about this all the time when we talk about the Russ trade. Like Denver and Seattle were so similar to each other last year. Denver has a better overall team and maybe a less headstrong coach now. But I don't think like Fant's situation has dramatically changed. Okay. Just first and foremost,
I agree.
He's being drafted as the tight end 21, which has got to just be like a perception thing. Like, oh, he was a part of the trade and he's not playing with Russell Wilson. So you know, move him down the rankings. But Fant, he's been in the league for 3 years. He's finished as a top 15 fantasy tight end all 3 years. And he's been a top 12 tight end the last 2 years. And again, this isn't a bad offense, a bad quarterback situation. And he no longer has Albert O to contend with for targets.
Yeah, but he's got the recently extended Will Disley. That was the most absurd free agency move I've seen in years. Right after they trade for Noah Fant, Seattle gives Will Disley a 3-year, $24 million deal.
Dude, Will Disley is so not a part of my thought process that I like literally gave him zero thoughts on this.
How many, no, I get it.
Yeah. He's caught fewer than 25 passes the last 3 years. I mean,
he played behind Gerald Everett last year too. Like he started out playing more than him and then Everett took over. So no, I agree. It was just a really head scratching move.
That is a very weird move. I mean, I honestly didn't even know that happened. That's how much I don't care about Disley. But maybe I should. No, I just think, where do I have him ranked here? Like this is 12. Okay. So I have him as like a top 15 tight end. I think that happens again. And I think he's undervalued as going as the tight end 21 on draft.
And maybe I'm not as low on him as I'm just higher on some of these other tight ends that I'm going to talk about.
That's fair.
And that obviously will just naturally move Noah Fant down. But yeah, I legitimately could talk about every tight end in this tier. So
I want to hear you talk about Njoku.
So, obviously, when he entered the league, he was a really exciting prospect and hasn't quite delivered, but Cleveland's still committing to him, right? They move on from Austin Hooper. They initially give Njoku the franchise tag, and then they just recently gave him that massive contract extension. He's being paid as like one of the top seven tight ends in the NFL. You look at it, too, I still believe in the talent. If Deshaun Watson's out there, it's a massive quarterback upgrade. If he's not, and maybe that's why Baker Mayfield's on the team, they're kind of waiting to see what happens. I still think Njoku could be good with Baker because you look at it, he's competing for targets right now with Amari Cooper, and then third year, I believe, Donovan Peoples-Jones, rookie David Bell. And the main thing for me, the most important thing, what did the Browns do the last couple years with Harrison Bryant and Austin Hooper and Njoku? They ran more three tight end sets than anybody by a large, large, large margin, right? You look at it last season, Cleveland went out of 13 personnel, which is three tight ends, 17% of the time. That was, again, easily the highest rate in the league. But now with Austin Hooper gone, that's going to come down, which probably means we see more David Njoku out of the slot, which I love. He played in the slot around 31% of the time last year. I think that number goes up because Hooper was in the slot around that same range, I think a little bit higher rate. And if Deshaun Watson's under center, Deshaun Watson's obviously a very, very talented quarterback, but he's also really relied on his tight ends in the end zone. His final three seasons in Houston, tight ends accounted for nearly 24% of the passing touchdowns from Deshaun Watson. So I just think between the commitment the Browns have made, the talent still being there for me, and the role change, I think David Njoku could be this year's breakout. Again, post-hype, to say the least, but a breakout candidate at tight end. Yeah, post-post-hype.
Post-post-post-post-post-post.
Yeah, post-hype. But I moved him up to like tight end 11 the other day, so very bullish, but with these tight ends, right, like you got to make a stance, right? Like, there's downside to almost everybody. I guess there is downside to Cole Kmet because that offense is terrible. But I see the ceiling. And if I see a ceiling there over some other tight ends in this range, I'm going to move them up.
So I have Njoku in this tier two, but he's the one I feel least good about. I pretty easily could have put him at the top of tier six, but he just got this like huge contract from the Browns. Potentially upgraded quarterback situation with Deshaun Watson. I mean, there's no chance Baker ends up playing quarterback for the Browns this year, right? He's still technically on the roster.
Yeah, I just don't know what's going to happen. I would probably move him down a little bit if Baker's the quarterback, but not substantially, I don't think. Just it's more so the role change and the commitment the Browns made to him for me. Not as many three tight end sets, playing in the slot more, running more routes. Like, that's massive for me.
Totally agreed. And we've seen the ceiling. In week 5 last year, he had 7 targets,
that was a Chargers 7 receptions. Game, right?
Yep. 149 yards and a touchdown. But then every other game, except for one, he had fewer than 40 receiving yards. So I don't know how much we can put into it because, like you were saying, the Browns were constantly running three tight ends, two tight end sets. And Njoku they've invested in him. It seems like he's going to be in a different role. So very exciting time to be an Njoku fan, but tempered expectations just given how disappointing he's been. I just feel like if he is going to be some amazing, awesome player, we would have seen it by now.
That's but fair.
I'm still willing to bet on the role
tight,
change
and toward, tight ends towards, always, towards the end of tight ends. And tight, exactly. Tight ends always a position that takes a while, right? You don't see many first, second year tight ends just dominate right out of the gate.
Right, right.
So again, at this point, you'd hope to see a little bit more from Njoku, but this could be the year because he's in a better role. So what are your thoughts on Irv Smith and Cole Kmet, who, oh man, this time last year, I was just all in on Irv Smith, and then he had the preseason injury. But the torn meniscus, I feel the same way about Irv as I did last year, but almost slightly better because it's a new offense with Kevin O'Connell there. They're going to throw more, I think. And again, this is 2 years ago now, but if you remember, Irv Smith played in weeks 14 through 17 with Kyle Rudolph sidelined. During that span, he's a tight end 4 in fantasy. He averaged just under 13 fantasy points per game. He was second among all tight ends in end zone targets during that span, and he ran a route on nearly 89% of Minnesota's passing snaps. 8th in routes run at tight end during that span. If he has that role, he's going to be a top 12 tight end, in my opinion. He's too talented not to. I understand he's competing with Thielen and Jefferson, but I just am a firm believer in the talent, similar with a lot of these other players. So that is my case, same as it was 2 years ago for Irv Smith, but I like the offense more than I did, you know, going into last season.
I like it. I love Irv too. I pretty easily could have put him at the bottom of this tier. So yeah, I have no issue with that. And then I know we've talked a lot about Cole Kmet and how much we both like him as a breakout candidate this year. There's really not that much to not like about him as a sleeper. His target opportunity this year is going to be huge. I mean, it's Darnell.
I remember we talked about him before. I said he could have I would not be surprised if he has a year that Dalton Schultz just had last year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's Darnell Mooney and then probably Cole Kmet, right? They have
not probably not at all probably. Fair.
And then it'll be Cole Kmet. So how many targets does that end up being for him? 110?
120? I think that's firm. Yeah, 120 probably seems like a lot, but the Bears defense is kind of bad now too. They lost a lot of players, obviously Khalil Mack. This is going to be, in my opinion, one of the five worst teams in football. So if they're throwing and playing from behind a lot, Cole Kmet could see, he's obviously not going to come anywhere close to, the Andrews Kelsey target totals, but he had 93 last year. Yeah, if he gets to 110, don't be surprised at all.
He was already top 10 in target share among tight ends last year and mm-hmm. top 10 in targets per route run.
So, and now Robinson's gone.
Yeah.
And they didn't bring anybody in of notes. Byron Pringle and Velus Jones and Equanimeous St. Brown. And the other thing, obviously, similar to Miles Sanders at running back, he didn't score a touchdown. Jimmy Graham, over 27% of his targets last year came in the end zone. His snap share was not even close to Cole Kmet's, but when he's on the field, it was when they were inside the 10 and inside the 5. And Jimmy Graham's gone. So Cole Kmet, with the targets and receptions we expect him to get, he doesn't need 8, 9, 10 touchdowns. You give him 5. You give him 5 or 6, he'll be fine. So Kmet's the one in this range I probably feel the best about. Actually, not even probably, pretty easily feel the best about, and I do have him the highest in my rankings. And it's interesting too, because Dawson Knox is in this tier. He's the opposite for me as Cole Kmet. His touchdown rate was so absurdly high, and he's going to have touchdown opportunities because he's playing with Josh Allen in that offense. But O.J. Howard's there. They still have a lot of other pass catchers. And Gabriel Davis, we talk about it. All Gabriel Davis does when he gets 5 targets or more, plays the majority of snaps, is score touchdowns. So if I personally expect Gabe Davis to have this massive season, breakout season, and Diggs is always going to have his numbers, Dawson Knox touchdowns are coming down. So Knox, love him. I love the rapport he has with Josh Allen, but he's a pretty easy candidate to underwhelm this year for me.
All right,
but he belongs in this tier because of the upside.
I agree with you. All right, I just looked at every tight end that had at least 30 targets last year. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of them did not score touchdowns. One of them was Cole Kmet. Here's his company.
Wait, I thought you were going to let me guess.
Oh, there's kind of a lot to guess, but can you guess any of them?
So it was at least 30 targets?
At least 30 targets. And zero touchdowns. By the way, Cole Kmet had 93 targets and zero touchdowns.
Yeah, it's so, so insanely absurd. Yeah, it's going to take forever. I'll try to guess one.
All right, I'm going
to 30 is not a massive number. I'll say, did Evan Engram score?
Evan Engram, I got to look. Evan Engram scored 3 times.
Okay, give them to me.
All right, Ian Thomas. Oh, Jordan Akins.
He literally ran routes for no reason last year.
Jordan Akins, Pharaoh Brown, James O'Shaughnessy, Durham Smith, and Dan Arnold. That is not good company. But the bottom line is Cole Kmet's going to score touchdowns this year.
Yeah, my bold call is he will score at least one.
He's going to score at least 4. Is my yeah. bold call.
Anybody else missed here that we haven't touched on? Mike Gesicki, Albert O, I guess, is interesting, obviously. I have some concerns about Albert O. I don't have him as a top 12 tight end or anything. Like, they added Greg Dulcich, and it's not just Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy. It's 2 running backs that are fantastic. It's Tim Patrick. It's KJ Hamler's getting some hype. Like, I think Albert O is going to be super inconsistent. And I understand the upside. And again, similar to the other, that's why he belongs in this tier, because you can see the argument and make the case that he's a top 10 guy. But he's, in my opinion, he's going to be very, very inconsistent.
Albert O is a good player, but he's not as good as like Noah Fant, I don't think. I don't know. I don't really have a lot of excitement about Albert O. I don't even have him in this tier. I have him in tier 6.
Oh, all right. Well, let's go to tier 6 then. For me, real quick, I have Hunter Henry, Logan Thomas, then I have Noah Fant. I have Brevin Jordan, Tyler Higbee, Gerald Everett, Evan Engram, Austin Hooper. And then again, we're not going to talk about all the tight ends, but you can put really anybody you can make the argument for as a sleeper breakout late round tight end. You can really make the argument and put them in this tier if you want. Anybody, really.
I have the same tier as you.
The Jets actually. Tight ends. Hayden Hurst. Whoever.
I have the same tier as you, except I have Irv and Albert O here. But I could pretty easily move Irv up. But Albert O is in this tier for me, firmly.
Yeah, and I think a couple other players that you can, again, put in this tier. Jonnu Smith, if the Patriots realize that they paid him money and want to give him the ball. The Colts tight ends, Mo Alie-Cox. And then, here's a question. And before we get to the tight ends in this tier. Say Gronk comes out tomorrow and says, I'm not playing football anymore. I'm retired. I had a great career. I'm going to go do commercials, even though I'm already doing 7. Every time I turn my TV on, Gronk's on a commercial. Where would Cameron Brate be?
He would be in this tier for me, for sure.
Not higher?
I'd
move him up
5.
To tier 5 pretty easily, yeah.
Yeah, he'd probably be tier 5. Cameron Brate actually had more end zone targets than Gronk last year.
Cameron Brate is good.
I know Gronk missed some time, like 5 or 6 weeks, but yeah, that stat surprised me. Brate, he is good. He's not like great, but he's definitely a good player.
Yeah, and he had plenty of fantasy success alongside O.J. Howard when Jameis was there. Like, Jameis was throwing to Cameron Brate a ton. So yeah, I would put him in at least tier 5 if Gronk said he was done playing football. And shout out Ryan Fitzpatrick. Cameron Brate went to Harvard, just in case you needed to know that. We should have led with that, man. Ryan Fitzpatrick, what a career.
Right.
Like the most average quarterback ever, but nobody cared because he was so fun and so likable.
I wanted him to just like ultimately end up playing for all 32 teams.
Yeah, man. And he played for the entire AFC East other than New England. He played for what? Tampa, the Rams.
One of the most viral tweets I ever sent was, and I actually legitimately think this was true, is I ranked each team's best quarterback for the 2010 decade in the AFC East. The Patriots was Tom Brady. The Jets was Ryan Fitzpatrick. The Dolphins was Ryan Fitzpatrick. And the Bills was Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I think it's true too. As a Bills fan, like, I'm thinking, like, Tryon Edwards, no. EJ Manuel, no. Kyle Orton, no. Like, yeah, man. It's, he didn't get to play one playoff game either, man. I just want to see one playoff game from him. It would have been amazing. But yeah, tier six.
I'm going to just say the player I'm actually most interested in this tier, and I'm not going to like bank on him, but I think Evan Engram could end up as like a top 15 fantasy tight end.
Oh man.
I
struggle with him because he could even be trustworthy in fantasy during his time with the Giants when every receiver was hurt. There were games where Evan Engram was the only reliable pass catcher and he's still underwhelmed.
I know. And Dan Arnold is still on the team. And I think he's kind of like in that wide receiver tight end hybrid role. But I do think if you are a believer in Trevor Lawrence as an NFL talent, mm-hmm. then you should be a believer in some of the weapons around him. I'm not saying I'm a believer in Evan Engram. Just of these tight ends going this
sure.
low, he's the one that I have like the highest hope for.
Mine's Brevin
really
Jordan.
I mean, there's really no good stats to support Evan Engram, so I'm not going to try to do that. But the only one that I do have is Jacksonville's leading tight end last year averaged between 6 and 8 targets per game. So
whether it was like Arnold or O'Shaughnessy, right. like whoever it was for that game, that's pretty good. It's a good stat.
So again, Arnold being there, I think really caps my Engram excitement possibility, whatever word you want to use. But yeah, I think there's a path there. It's just a question of A, how much will Dan Arnold play, and B, does Evan Engram, is he just not that good?
Yeah, for me, the most excited I am for a tight end in this range is Brevin Jordan. Second year player, really talented, dealt with some injuries his first part of last season. He missed the first 7 games of his rookie season. But then as he became a larger part of the offense, we saw the upside. He played under 30% of the snaps in his first 3 games after returning from injury. But then he went on to play at least 60% of snaps in most of those games. Like, the tight end depth chart is bad. Jordan Akins is a free agent. It's really Farrell Brown and Brevin Jordan. Jordan will play more than him pretty easily. And again, like, you're looking at this point of the draft at these tight ends, who has a chance to be second on their team in targets? We mentioned that with Cole Kmet. We mentioned that with David Njoku. We mentioned that you can make the case for, you know, some of these other tight ends in this tier, like Hunter Henry. I think Brevin Jordan easily has a case to finish second on this team in targets behind Brandon Cooks. And Davis Mills, we saw production and really strong play from him. And you have Pep Hamilton there calling plays as the offense coordinator. We've seen tight ends be a huge focal point of the offenses for Pep Hamilton. So I like Brevin Jordan as a really deep sleeper. What do you think of Hunter Henry? Because the touchdown rate was insane. I have zero interest in Hunter Henry. I get it. Like, the overall pass catchers for New England still aren't great, but they have Devontae Parker, who can be an end zone target when he's in the field. And I just think at some point you have to get Jonnu Smith involved. It was so odd last year. Like, we know New England uncharacteristically just emptied the bank in free agency. And two of their first signings, right? Two of their first signings were Hunter Henry. Jonnu was signed before Hunter Henry, I believe. And I think we're going to see him like get occasional carries, but like they need to get him the ball more. He's very, 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 still very, very good after the catch and everything. But what are your thoughts on Hunter Henry and anybody else from this tier and anybody else we haven't talked about, right? There's still like the Jets tight ends and Hayden Hurst could make the case as a deep sleeper, but he's like fourth at best in targets in Cincinnati now.
I don't, I'm going to look this up real quick. Underdog ADP.
Which we have at F10 Fantasy.
I just Googled it. It's right there. All right. Position tight end. Where is Hunter Henry being drafted? That's what I want to know. Looks like he's the tight end 17 in Underdog right now. I don't hate that. I mean, Cole Kmet is actually going after him, which is crazy.
That's absurd.
David Njoku, Noah Fant. I would draft all of those guys over Henry. So maybe I don't like, maybe I am not an advocate of drafting him at his current ADP. But if he was going like tight end 20 or later, I don't think he's just gonna like stop scoring touchdowns. I think he could just be a player that just New England ends up targeting a bunch near the red zone.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick just does what works. And that worked. So yeah, he's not going to score as many touchdowns this year, but I do think if you're like streaming a tight end and the Patriots are going up against a bad, like a good matchup for tight ends, then Henry becomes a good play. But
yeah, absolutely.
He's not a player that I'm going to be drafting just because he's not a player you're going to start every week and feel good about.
No, 18% of his targets came in the end zone last season. Only Mark Andrews had more end zone targets among tight ends. And then you take away the touchdowns in the end zone role, which again is valuable in itself, but 17th among tight ends in targets and receptions. He only had five receptions in four games. Like
Henry's actually a really good use case of final season standings not always being the best representative of where a player fit in mm-hmm. in terms of fantasy value.
Yeah, Tyler Lockett was like that a little bit too.
Yeah, Lockett's a little bit like that, but like, is there a chance that Henry finishes as a top 12 fantasy tight end?
Yeah.
Yeah, there absolutely is. But will he be like top 12 in weekly rankings? No, just because it's going to be really inconsistent and very touchdown dependent. So to the listeners, maybe I'll write an article or something about that to dive into it a little bit more. But don't just look at last year's scoring total because there's always more behind it.
Anybody else that you want to mention at tight end? Like, I have Logan Thomas in this here coming off the injury. Like, we could see him involved with Carson Wentz, who's targeted tight ends a lot throughout his career. I like Gerald Everett as well.
Tyler Higbee's a little bit interesting. You know, he's cheap access to a really good offense. I actually don't have any Higbee stats in front of me, but
I had him as a bust last year, and it looked like it was going to be a terrible call because week one he was good and he played like 90% of snaps and ran a route. Like his routes per dropback and everything were massive, which obviously Gerald Everett wasn't there last year. So like Higbee played a great role. It's just he didn't see a lot of targets per route run because Cooper Kupp was targeted, 78 times per game. but again, like you said, among the tight ends in this tier, like the Rams offense is the only two offenses in this tier for me that are even close to being good are the Rams and the Chargers because I have Gerald Everett in this tier as well. Then it's, you know, Austin Hooper in that offense, Brevin Jordan, Noah Fant, Logan Thomas, Hunter Henry, and like the definition of an average offense at best. So, yeah, I mean, like you said, you get exposure to the Rams passing game.
Over the second half of the year from weeks 9 on, Higbee had at least 5 targets in every game. So, Not huge, but that's a decent floor for a tight end going.
I mean, 5 targets per game from Stafford or 7 targets per game from, I don't know,
Drew Lock or Geno Smith. You're right.
I'll take the 5 from Stafford probably.
Yeah, I think he's interesting. Not a player I'm going to be excited about, but at this range, we've talked about this. I like access to good offenses.
Yeah, makes a ton of sense. And we'll close it out. I would say just keep an eye on like the Jets tight ends. They have Tyler Conklin and CJ Uzama now, like kind of crowded, but like if one of those two were to miss time, the other could have some really strong numbers. And then Hayden Hurst, he was a really popular breakout candidate his first year in Atlanta, did not pan out, but he'll probably have some weeks. Like CJ Uzama was pretty involved despite playing with Jamar Chase and company last season. So Hayden Hurst will be somebody you don't have to draft probably unless you're in like the deep best ball drafts or whatever. But like streaming, you have injuries at tight end. Like Hayden Hurst can give you some sort of production. And again, you talk about access to elite offenses and elite passing games. That's what the Cincinnati Bengals are. Anything else from this tight end preview?
No, I would. My final recommendation would be make sure you draft one of the players maybe that are like in the top 10. And then if anything after that, don't just expect them to be like your tight end for the whole year.
Yeah, totally. That's the other thing you can do, right? Like
you can stream this position very easily.
And because like if you're in a traditional redraft, like 12 team league, whatever, like you shouldn't draft a second quarterback, but you can draft two tight ends. Like if your number one tight end you draft is Irv Smith, right? I love Irv Smith, but there's clearly a case where he doesn't pan out. Draft Irv Smith. Whoever your two favorite breakout candidates at tight end are, Irv Smith and Cole Kmet, draft them both. Irv Smith and whoever, Albert O, like draft them both because there's, like you said, there's a good chance whoever your starting tight end is, if you don't draft the top 7 or 8 tight end, there's a good chance they're not on your roster by week 8, by week 7, by week 6. But you're giving yourself a better chance of hitting if you draft multiple. And it's, again, you're not drafting two quarterbacks most likely. So just, you know, draft your bench and fill them out. And I think with tight end, we say it every year, like, it feels deeper than ever. It feels deeper than ever, then most of the time it isn't. But to give yourself the best chance of hitting on that breakout, hitting on Dalton Schultz, hitting on whoever, draft too. Like, I did that in the league I had Dalton Schultz in last year. I went Irv and Schultz, and my goodness, thank God I did, because Irv got hurt week or before the season started, and I locked into Dalton Schultz, who was a top five tight end.
Yeah, I had zero Schultz last year, so good call on your end there.
Oh, it was total luck. I remember Ray Garvin was very high in Dalton Schultz, and that was an elite call. So,
all right, are we ending the podcast by saying it? I think tight end's deep this year.
it's really deep this year.
Yeah.
So do I. So do with that what you will. But these have been the positional previews. We wrap it up at tight end. We're going to be doing some team previews, like I mentioned last week. Some, you know, 30-minute pods, breaking down the teams, different, you know, scheme changes, different player personnel. And again, there was a lot with this offseason. So make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the FTN Datacast on iTunes, whatever platform you listen to, so you don't miss out on any of the episodes. Tyler. Good stuff, man. Hopefully we didn't jinx the tight end position.
We definitely jinxed it, dude. There's going to be like four good tight ends and everyone else is going to suck.
We will see. And I keep thinking and I keep looking at the calendar, man. It's June 6th. It's getting close. So make sure you're locked in FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, FTN Bets for all the great content we have in store. Have a great week. Thanks for listening as always. We will see you guys next time. This is the FTN Datacast presented by the FTN Network. See you.
Thanks for listening to the FTN Datacast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And follow the hosts on Twitter at @APfeiffer24 and @LochnerNFL.